as America celebrates our independence, we will talk about how to achieve financial independence during this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Our regular financial planner, Kevin McKinley, is taking this week off, but we have another financial advisor who will share some advice to help you along on your journey to financial independence. And we will welcome your questions, your personal finance questions for her, maybe even your own suggestions, your own recommendations. What did it take for you to reach financial independence? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest financial expert has also written a piece that appeared recently in the Green Bay Press Gazette, which is titled Creating Your Path to Financial Independence, and we have posted that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you'd like to take a look at it. We are very happy to have with us Deborah DeLeers, a Green Bay-based financial advisor with SII Investments Incorporated. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks very much for being with us. And let me also tell listeners or remind listeners that, as is the case when Kevin McKinley is with us, that we are not giving individualized investment advice to listeners. You should consult with your own financial advisor prior to making any investment decisions. So first off, Deborah, what does it mean to be financially independent?
Realistically, it means having enough wealth, whether that's a savings account, investments, having enough wealth to be able to live day to day without budgeting, without scraping by, to be able to purchase what you need and without having to actively work for those basic necessities. And that could mean something different for each individual depending on what your goals are and what your lifestyle is. But it's really having what you need without having to scrape by and work for it.
Yeah, well, you have to work to get the paycheck to pay the mortgage, though.
That's correct. That's correct.
but also, you might want to, when you retire, you want to be able to have not only the day-to-day living as you're going through your working career. When you retire, you want to have enough money on hand so you don't have to work to make ends meet.
Absolutely, and I think we're all looking towards retirement on some level. And retirement looks differently for every person. Some people want to travel the world and have that type of experience, which, of course, is going to cost more than if you want to travel your local state parks and, you know, just kind of visit family in the United States or somewhere more local. Some people want to have, you know, the nicer cars, maybe a RV. Some people don't have that goal. But whatever your goal for retirement is, I think it's important to sit down and think about what income are you going to need during that time period so that you can have not just your day-to-day expenses, but that you can go on a vacation if you want to. You do have flexible money in your budget to be able to purchase a new vehicle or do things with your family that, you know, again, aren't tied to having to work and scrape by to try to make it happen. You already have those resources set aside and available.
I'm going to need a lot of resources because I want to go see the state parks and I want to travel the world. So I want to do it all.
Well, I think that's a great thing.
So I think I know the answer to this, but is there a one-size-fits-all approach to financial independence?
There is not, but there are tips that people can use to get there. And I would say the reason it's not a one-size-fits-all approach is because everybody's needs, goals, and desires are going to be different. You're starting at a different place, and everybody might want something a little bit different. So the target changes from individual to individual. But when we look at how do we get that, that's where we have some uniform approaches that we can look at to obtain the wealth, whatever that wealth is, that we need at the end.
And we will go through some of those. But on a related note, in the news, there's a survey that finds nearly half of Americans say their expenses are equal to or greater than their income. That's a new study from the Center for Financial Services Innovation. Oh, that's kind of scary. What's your reaction to that?
I think it is scary, and I think it comes down to really what are our needs and what are our wants. And I think in today's day and age, things have changed so significantly for how we purchase things. You can go online with a credit card, and in a few clicks, you can purchase various items without logging that in your check register to balance your checkbook. So we're paying with plastic more often than we're paying with cash. And so you can lose sight more easily of how much you're really spending until you get that statement at the end of the month, and then maybe sit back and cringe a little bit because you overdid it. And now we have to pay for those consequences. I also think it's a lifestyle of impulse for many people and a desire to kind of keep up with the person next door. And it's a very consumer-driven society. And so I'm not surprised by the statistic, but it's definitely frightening.
We are talking with Deborah DeLeers. She is a Green Bay-based financial advisor with SII Investments. Her recent piece in the Green Bay Press Gazette is Creating Your Path to Financial Independence. And we are welcoming your questions for her, your personal finance questions about achieving financial independence, or your own ideas or suggestions. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Our regular financial planner, Kevin McKinley, is off this week, and he'll be back next week. Well, since we are celebrating our freedoms and our independence this week, Deborah, why might it be a good time to think about our finances?
I think it's really important to sit down and think about what your income is, what your expenses are, and then what your goals are financially. With the statistic that you had just mentioned, Joy, with so many people living outside of their means, I think it's important to kind of rein that in so that we aren't living paycheck to paycheck and we have a little bit more flexibility in our budget for emergency expenses or retirement so that we have the money that we need available. So for me as a planner, I think it's important for everybody to evaluate their own situation and create a plan going forward to give them what they need in their situation.
Yeah. So give us, I guess, the 101 on this. Starts with a budget, I assume.
It absolutely starts with a budget, and that means you really should be looking at the last several months of your spending habits, whether that's credit card statements or bank statements, to see exactly where your money is going. I think many people will be surprised by going through that exercise, because once you start calculating maybe how many times you're dining out or grabbing your Starbucks or your coffee, whatever your morning vice might be, even social activities or clothes spending. I think most people have been to Target or a similar store, and they've gone in with a list of maybe a few things that they've needed, and by the time they hit the checkout, $100 later, they bought many things that they don't need. Those are the types of surprises that by going through your statements, you can get a handle on and then realize, what are the expenses we really need to be paying for each month? Of course, that's our rent or our mortgage, our electric, our heat, our water, likely a cell phone or some sort of communication bill, transportation, so whether that's a car payment or fuel, insurance, those types of things we need to spend our money on. Just in today's society, that's a requirement. But all of those other soft expenses, the Starbucks, the dining out, those are not necessities. So those are things that once we know how much of our money is going to things that we don't really need each month, we can evaluate what can we get rid of, how can we trim that down so that hopefully our income is greater than our expenses and we have a little flexibility in our budget.
Mm-hmm. So what about then setting goals? All right, we've done the budget aspect of this, and maybe we should just talk in general first. How should we be thinking about our financial goals in order to set us up for success?
I think it depends on where you're starting from. So if you're starting from a position of your income does not meet your expenses, we have to evaluate those expenses and then determine, okay, once we cut out some of these soft expenses, how are we going to refunnel that money? If we have $50 of flexibility every month that you've been able to carve out, how much of that goes into a savings account for that rainy day fund? How much of that is going into an investment account if you have that opportunity? When we start looking at those goals, it really becomes, what do we need? Are we just trying to get out of debt, or are we trying to save? Maybe we're out of debt and we're just trying to make sure we have enough for retirement. If you're in that group that is just trying to get out of debt, let's try to really strategically pay down that debt with any extra money that we can get in our budget each month. And that's an analysis of what kind of debt do we have. Is it credit card debt, where we're ticking anywhere between 15% interest and 25% interest every month if we're not paying that balance in full? If so, we want to get rid of that. We want to get rid of those high interest debts. It might just be that our mortgage is the biggest debt that we have on our books. And then I think it's reevaluating, what's the interest rate that we're paying on that mortgage? How long are we paying it for? Is it a 30-year mortgage? With the interest rate environment, are we able to refinance that maybe down to a 15-year mortgage and have maybe the same type of payment, but you can pay it off in half the time? And it's really that type of analysis on every single thing within our financial situation.
We are talking about financial independence on this Independence Day, the week that we are celebrating the America's independence. We also are talking about how we can achieve financial independence during this edition of On Your Money. So what's your secret? Or what question do you have? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Deborah Deliers is our guest, a Green Bay-based financial advisor with SII Investments Incorporated. This is the Ideas Network. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, our regular financial planner. Kevin McKinley is off this week, but we are fortunate to have with us a Green Bay-based financial advisor with SII Investments Incorporated, Deborah Deliers. She also is the author of a recent piece that appeared in the Green Bay Press Gazette, which is titled Creating Your Path to Financial Independence. And we are focusing in on that, creating your path to financial independence. Do you have a question along those lines when it comes to spending or saving or financial goals? Do you have a suggestion? Maybe you have a tip or two you'd like to share. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Deborah, Carrie called in and couldn't stay with us, but she has a question that probably, a lot of people have. She wants to know, how do you save money when most jobs pay only $10 an hour or less? So if you don't have a very high-paying job, how in the world can you become financially independent?
That's a great question, and you're right. I think many people are probably in that situation. And here's really the starting point. Again, it starts with the budget. What are you making? What are your hard expenses? Are there soft expenses that you can get rid of every month or put into a savings account? Because if we only have a limited income, we have to be really diligent with our spending to make sure that we're on a budget and that we're not expending our resources outside of those means. Beyond that, I think it's really a matter of investing in yourself as well. And so certainly there are entry-level jobs out there or lower-paying jobs where I think it's important to see and look within yourself, are there things you can do for advancement? Maybe it's an additional certification through a tech school. Maybe it's something that you can achieve online where you can get another certification or skill level, which puts you in the position for a promotion. Maybe it's looking outside of that particular company and seeing what else is available in the market as far as what are other employers offering. Could you move somewhere else and get a higher paying job? And I will speak from experience here in that sometimes it feels like you're stuck within a box and you have this education and this skill set and you can't move beyond that. People aren't going to look for that and you kind of get stuck in your comfort zone. But it really does take thinking outside of the box and being your own advocate. My background is actually in the legal field as well. So in addition to being a financial advisor, I'm an estate planning attorney. Oh. And as I began transitioning into the financial industry, those were some of the questions I was looking at myself with how do I take what I have now and move it to where I want to be. And I think no matter who you are, that's a self-analysis that you can perform to invest in yourself and move yourself into that next level of job or position. So it really starts with the budget, number one, on the financial side, and how can you make yourself more appealing in the environment that we're looking at for employers to get yourself that promotion, to get yourself that next type of position where you can potentially earn more. Yeah. And some of it might be time and experience, but then it's putting in the time and being engaged and talking with your supervisors, talking with a mentor in the area that you want to be in to see what it is from a practical standpoint, maybe aside from the certifications, that's going to take you from the position you're currently in to the next level, maybe a supervisory role or a different leadership role.
So let's, looking toward your piece, one of your first points is be realistic with your goals and understand that becoming financially independent does not happen overnight. Talk a little bit about what more we need to do to be realistic.
Okay, so one of the examples in my article was if you are currently living paycheck to paycheck and you set a goal to be financially independent in 6 to 12 months, meaning you don't have to work for your daily needs, that's probably not right. Going to be a realistic goal for you. And if you're setting goals that aren't possible, that you truly can't achieve, it's pretty discouraging, and it gives you that negative feedback, and you probably will stop trying to achieve it. So I think it's a matter of if you're living paycheck to paycheck, your goal to become financially independent should be done over time, but let's set mini goals along the way. Maybe the first one is to dial down your spending and find a way to at least balance your income to your expenses. Maybe it's obtaining, you know, some additional education so that you can move past where you're at. Maybe it's paying down the debt, and what do we want to focus on first? Maybe it's paying down the credit cards, then the school tuition bills if we have any of those loans outstanding. But it's setting realistic small goals, and once you achieve the first one, paying down your first credit card, let's move to the next credit card and make sure that the credit card debt is being paid down.
We are talking with Deborah DeLeers. She is a Green Bay-based financial advisor. And we are talking about achieving financial independence. If you have questions along these lines or suggestions, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Bonnie in Fort Atkinson is with us. Hi, Bonnie.
Hello. Being a sibling of seven siblings and then raising five daughters on my own, one technique that I've often told friends and family is, especially if you're a married couple or prior to marriage, learn to live off of one income. Use your budget on that one income. And then use the other one to set up either down payments for homes or your retirement funds. But it makes it a lot easier if you just focus on living on that one income and then use the other extra income to build up those other things. We all run into issues in life of divorce, having children, or going back to school, or illness that seems to throw us off. And that's where, as a single mom for 17 years, it was hard to go through that. But then, like you said, do those frugal things to make room for that My question for her is, I do have four daughters, and I taught them how to save in a Roth IRA, and of course, they meet that partner in life who doesn't do the same tactics as you taught your children. So what do you do when that marriage comes together, and then they lose all the things that you've taught them and fall off the deep end of getting in debt again?
Oh.
That's really a great question. And it's a hard question to answer, but I think it's a matter of, if you've been there to teach them those skills along the way, I think you should also be there to be a gentle reminder to them about their spending habits. And if it's a matter of they're looking at purchasing a home, that's great. It's a great investment, but let's make sure it's a home that they can afford, as opposed to something that they get pre-approved for that's outside of their budget. And so hopefully you've taught them the skills that they need to be able to have open communication in their marriage or in their partnership to make sure that they're speaking with their spouse or their significant other, because it's going to come down to their own communication and their own agreements. But you can be that gentle reminder in the background.
It sounds like the partners of Bonnie's daughters want to buy boats and this and that and the other thing, and maybe the daughters are not saying no, Bonnie.
Thank you. Yes, exactly. It's the spenders of the family after you taught them the saving skills.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Bonnie. How about Bonnie's idea of, if you are married and you have two incomes, to try to live off one income, if that's at all possible, and do the rest of, the rest of your investing or saving with the other income.
I really like that idea. And the reason why is because, again, if we're trying to live within our means and make sure that we're putting money aside, you should be saving some income. And rather than trying to divide which spouse is bringing in what amount and how much we save from each one, I think it's a great thing to do if you can afford to do it. It's going to come down to discipline and choices and looking at those needs versus wants, but it then allows you a large sum potentially each year to put into your investments, which will pay you dividends in the long run. So I do think that's a great idea if you have the discipline to do it.
Mary called in and says, younger people today seem to have a live-for-today attitude, which is not conducive to saving for the future. She adds, it seems like there's less responsibility about worrying about being in debt. I don't know, Deborah, do you think young people today have a live-for-today attitude that's maybe different than when we were younger?
I do think that there's a hint of that, and I think it's about maybe perspective and how people have been raised. I grew up in a family business, so my dad had a family business, and I was very aware of the hours that you had to put in to earn your income and what you needed to do to get through. Not everybody has that type of experience, and I think the tendency is to give your children what you don't have or what you didn't have. And so maybe the philosophies that they were raised with financially are a little different than what they would have been in years past. But I do think that the biggest thing we can teach the younger generation, those coming into the workforce now, would be about managing money and really needs versus wants and debt control. If they've gone to a four-year school, chances are they're coming out with some significant college debt. And we want to make sure that they can handle that and understand that you really don't want to carry it forever. You want to get rid of that debt as quickly as you can so that you can grow and invest and save. What I hear a lot from the younger people today is, well, I can't worry about saving. I don't have any money. I have more debt. I can't focus on that, which is maybe true in part, but not true at the same time, because it creates a habit of spending and saving that they need to on board with in order to have some savings long term and get rid of their debt as quickly as they possibly can.
And I certainly didn't mean to hint that you were anywhere near my age, because you're not.
I didn't take any offense, Joy.
But when college graduates today do have higher financial aid debt, student loan debt, perhaps, I know that I did, and it is perhaps harder for them to pay off that debt and really get a financial footing toward buying that first house or saving for retirement. How do you advise that recent college graduate with a boatload of debt to get started in paying that off?
Again, it's going to come down to lifestyle and back to that budget. So you have this debt. Let's try to tackle how we're going to get rid of it. And again, I had mentioned earlier, one of our hard expenses is going to be transportation. But does that mean that as soon as you get your first job, you go out and you buy a brand new car? Well, to some it does, but should it? Mm-hmm. Probably not. You know, there are used car options, certified used car options, that you can get a safe, reliable vehicle without the same outlay of cash that you would if you're buying a brand new one. You can certainly go out and buy a new home. But again, let's make sure it's within your budget. Maybe you're renting a home for a period of time to be able to allow some savings to develop. And then for the new people coming into the workforce, I think they need to be diligent about what their employer offers for retirement plans and take advantage of that. I think some young people may not really understand the purpose of that or the benefit of putting that money into the retirement plan or taking the time to understand it. But in many situations, if they're lucky enough to have a job where their employer offers a retirement plan, oftentimes there's a match where if they're putting in a certain amount, their employer is going to match it. And that's money that's coming out of their paycheck before they even see it. So they're investing it without, to some extent, being cognizant of it day to day. And then they can work on their budget after that fact so that they already have some savings developed and taking advantage of any matches that are available to then really work on their bottom line with the budget. What I do with my clients who are younger is it really comes down to a financial education, and I put together a financial plan and a net worth statement, which on the front end is a little daunting only because of the debt that they're coming out of school with. But as they continue to develop saving habits and understand why it's important to save, I can do financial projections. If you save X amount, this is the likelihood of a successful retirement for you down the road. Whereas if you save X amount or if you don't save anything, here's the likelihood of a successful retirement down the road. It puts a visual to it, which I think sometimes helps people really understand the importance of saving and the importance of needs versus wants, living within their means, and really budgeting for a few years, if that's what it takes, pretty strictly in order to get on a good track.
Yeah. Talk a little bit more about the importance of becoming a saver. If it's not something we're doing right now, how do we work that into our daily lives?
There's a couple really easy ways, depending on whether you have direct deposit. So if you are working in an employer where you have direct deposit of your paycheck, a really easy thing to do if you have some flexibility in your income is to have a certain percentage of your paycheck every month go directly into a savings account as opposed to in your checking account. Your checking account is often what your debit card is going to be linked to or your checkbook is linked to where your expenses are going to come out of. But if a portion of that can go directly to your savings account, it's a little bit out of sight, out of mind, which allows you to stow a little bit more away every month. Another thing that is out there in the marketplace are debit cards or credit cards where you can round up the dollar value. So if you have a charge of $13.79, they're going to charge you at the point of purchase $14. And then that extra 21 cents is going to go into a separate savings account. So it's little things that you can do without really even having to think about it to start saving money every day. And then the other piece is to be conscious of it and to look at your income to expense ratio and tuck away a percentage of all of your flexible income. I can kind of use an analogy like a diet. If we're wanting to lose weight, we have to exercise and we have to eat right. So we have to probably limit our sweets, limit our sodas, things like that. Now, the goal is not to starve ourselves of those things, because then we're probably going to binge, and if we eat those things absolutely every single day, we're not going to lose any weight. We're not going to reach our goals. Finances is the same thing. If our goal is to save money, we can't deprive ourselves of absolutely every piece of enjoyment that we get, whether it's mm-hmm. our little bit of coffee or a movie night every now and again or a dinner out. But we have to be conscious that if we're doing those things every day, we're probably not going to meet our goals, because we have money trickling out that isn't going into our savings account or isn't going into our investment account. So it's really being conscious and making those choices to save.
We are talking with Deborah DeLeers, a Green Bay-based financial advisor with SII Investments Incorporated. Her recent piece in the Green Bay Press Gazette is Creating Your Path to Financial Independence. And as we celebrate our country's independence, we are talking about achieving financial independence during this edition of On Your Money. We welcome your questions, your personal finance questions for Deborah. We welcome your own advice, your own tips. How did you achieve financial independence, or what do you do to become a saver or to save more money? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Make that On Your Money at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off this week, but we are joined by Deborah DeLeers, who is a Green Bay-based financial advisor. Our number, if you have a question for her, is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. We are talking about achieving financial independence with Deborah. We have gone through her plan so far. Number one, be realistic with your goals. Number two, live within your means. Number three, pay off debt. Number four, become a saver. Number five, which we haven't talked about yet, and before we take calls, let's talk about investing in yourself. What is investing in yourself all about, Deborah?
I had alluded to it a little bit earlier, Joy, but really it's you are your own advocate. So you have to sit down and decide where you want to be in your career, because you are going to be one of your biggest assets and money-making producers, whether that's through your job employed somewhere else or through a business that you create. So if you are employed with an outside employer and you're not where you want to be, maybe you're unsettled, it's up to you to decide what are your goals from a career standpoint and what do you need to do to get there. And I think one of the big things that you can do for yourself is start talking to other people in the industry or a mentor who's in business or in a similar field to really understand what the path is for you to move from where you are now to the next level, whether that's an advancement within your own company, whether that's an advancement into a different career altogether, but to really put you in a position to increase your wages. As you advance in either your current industry or in a different industry, typically that's going to come with a higher paycheck. And there are things that you can do to achieve that. And I had mentioned earlier, maybe that's a certification. Maybe that's going for a different type of degree through a tech school or a four-year college. Maybe it's simply on-the-job experience, and if you can get connected with the right people in your organization, it makes your ability to climb the ladder a little bit easier. But ultimately, you are an asset to yourself. You, in your workforce, in your career, in your profession, are going to be the one generating the revenue. You're the one creating the money and taking it home with you. So let's do what we can to make sure that you're getting the highest pay for your time outside of the home.
Let's take some calls, as we have many now. Steve in Dodgeville is with us. Hi, Steve.
Hello, how are you doing? Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Steve.
Yes, I had a question about a unexpected letter that we had gotten, and it involves a variable death annuity that the family didn't realize that our mother, who recently passed away, had invested in. And we're trying to figure out how best to use that money, especially Don or her. And we've been sent a quite a lengthy document from the insurance company that administered the annuity, and there's about six or seven different options, and I haven't a clue what we should do with the money. And I heard that you have expertise in this area for estate planning.
Yes. The caveat to that, though, Steve, is that with an annuity product, there are various types of annuities, and it's essentially a contract. So each company is going to have slightly different terms, and depending on how your mom purchased that annuity, it's going to have different implications for how you can receive the money. So while I have expertise with it, it's really not without being able to see the contract itself. Mm. So my recommendation to you is, do you have an accountant that you work with to do your taxes?
Well, yes, and I in fact, was going to have a meeting with her this week, and I heard over the radio that you had a background in estate planning, and I guess a law degree is what I heard, and so that's
yes.
why I called in to see if I could get some pointers so I could at least sound a little bit intelligent when I went to talk.
When you go to your meeting, just remember there is no such thing as a stupid question, and these types of products are things that most people don't deal with every day. So I would recommend talking with your accountant and bringing that documentation with you so that they can review it. They may or may not have all the answers. They may want to confer with a financial advisor as well just to make sure that they're understanding things correctly. But there are different tax implications depending on how the contract was set up or how you received the money. So I would start with your CPA, bring all the documentation in, and they should be able to help at least navigate those choices for you.
Good luck to you, Steve, and we're very sorry for the loss of your mother. Let's go to Mary in Appleton next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question. I have a family member. They didn't make the best financial choices, and now their son is of college age. And they have plans for him, you know, to go on to college, and he's been accepted, all of those types of things. But because of some poor financial choices, they're getting turned down as co-signers for loans for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to figure out what to do, and I'm trying to figure out what to do to be able to help them, but also to help them to make some good financial choices as well.
Yeah, that's sad. So their son needs some loans to go to school, but he can't get them because his parents can't co-sign for him. They're not financially, the banks aren't accepting them co-signing.
Correct.
Hmm. What about that, Deborah?
Well, in that situation, typically the banks are going to want a co-signer, of course, because I'm assuming that he doesn't have credit history built up. So they want someone who can guarantee that the money is going to come back to them at some point. And that's a really tough situation if his parents aren't able to sign. But depending on his responsibility, if he's a good kid who is making sound choices and is aware of what a loan means and has that financial education, if there's someone in his life who would be willing to sign on, maybe it's an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent or a family friend who'd be able to sign as a co-signer on his loan. Otherwise, depending on where he was accepted through school, their financial aid department may have some assistance or some pointers that they might be able to help, whether through grants or scholarships, to maybe help lessen the burden of the loan themselves. So that might be something to check into. For the parents then themselves, getting some financial education, you know, we've talked a lot about budgeting on today's show, but some people don't necessarily know where to start when it comes to that. So if they have access to the internet, one of the things that I've used in the past has been mint.com, M-I-N-T.com. And really, it's a free service that you can go online and you can link your bank accounts, you can link your credit cards, you can link different accounts that you have. You can create a budget, and then every month you're going to get interactive news feeds or emails or text messages, depending how you want to interact with that website. And you can have an up-to-date, real-time financial picture of where you're at. And if you've created a budget and your expenses are exceeding your budget, you're going to get a notification through the website that you're exceeding your budget. And then they can kind of come back to the table and maybe reevaluate their spending or tweak their spending a little bit. But that might be a good place to start, because it allows them to sit and think through their spending, think through their budget, what their needs are. And by connecting all of their accounts to it, it's creating a live feed of their assets to compare where they're at with income to budget. So that might be a good place to start, really giving them the education and some tools to use to start making some better choices.
Thanks, Mary, for the call, and you're very kind to want to help. If someone has bad credit or poor credit, what's the first thing that we can do to try to correct that?
First thing that you can do is make sure you're paying your bills on time. Make sure that you're not missing payments and you're not late on payments, because those affect your credit. The other thing you can do is, if you go online, you can get a free credit report annually to show you what credit cards you may have out there. So many people have store credit cards, and you get asked every time you check out at nearly every store you go to whether you want to sign up for a store card. And so sometimes you lose sight of how much rolling credit, good or bad, you have. And so I think it's a good idea to sit down, look through that credit report, see what cards may be out there, what cards you can close down after they're paid off, to make sure that you have very limited abilities to rack up more credit card debt. You want to limit that spending. And it really is, you eliminate those cards, do not sign up for more. I know you get good discounts, but you can find coupons elsewhere or shop on sale. And then make sure you're paying your bills on time. Make sure that you're not missing payments. And the idea is to try to pay off all of those bills, particularly credit card bills, in full every month. So if you're spending $400 a month on your credit card, pay $400 a month on your credit card. If you don't have $400 a month to spend, make sure that whatever you're spending is a need, not a want, and work with that budget. And your credit will repair itself when you start making good habits over time and making your payments on time, limiting the credit that's out there and available. Sometimes you just need to establish credit. You may have bad credit because you don't have credit.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
So for those 18-year-olds graduating high school, looking into the college years, it's looking at potentially getting that credit card so that they can start establishing a credit history. But again, whatever payments you're making and whatever charges you're incurring should be paid off in full every month, if at all possible.
Eric in Beloit is with us next. Hi, Eric.
Hi there.
Hi,
yes,
Eric.
Go ahead.
Hi. So just listening to the program, I work in public health, and I heard your example about dieting and exercising, and I feel like at some point, you know, that assumes folks have a basic level of understanding, of education, and of access to resources. It puts a lot of onus on the individual to, you know, have the understanding to make those personal choices and the ability to do so. And I feel like some of the suggestions that are coming for financial health kind of also put that onus on the person. And so I'm just wondering if there are any suggestions that you might have for other folks in your profession or other folks who work with unbanked or underbanked populations who may not have access to credit or good credit, things like that, to try to increase folks' access to positive resources to, I guess, enhance their financial health.
Absolutely, and I think that's a great point. With my practice, my core foundation is education. Whether I'm talking about my financial clients or my legal clients, I want my clients, when they come into my office, to understand why we're doing what we're doing and I talk through that process with them so that I feel comfortable knowing that we have a plan, they're on board, they understand. So it's really that education. And certainly not every advisor takes that approach. Everyone does things a little bit differently. But I think the first step is looking for a resource that's available. Now, they can contact financial advisors, and financial advisors have, in most areas now, a fiduciary obligation to make sure that they're recommending things in the client's best interest. And oftentimes, there's going to be initial consultations at no charge just to kind of talk through someone's situation, see if there's a way that we can help. So that might be something that people might want to consider, is just picking up the phone, calling a financial advisor, whether it's a recommendation or a referral that they get from someone or maybe somewhere local in their community, and have the conversation, ask the questions. There are also resources within the community for financial education. There's different nonprofits that will host seminars. I myself do various speaking engagements to help educate people about some of these things. Is there a better way to coordinate that? I'm certain there's got to be, because I agree with you. The biggest hurdle many people have is the education and knowing what to do and when to do it. So I think that's a great point. And thanks, something that the industry as a whole can improve upon.
Thanks to Eric. Grant on Facebook says, I'm 19 and I have had a Roth IRA for 4 years. Oh, my goodness. Through summer jobs, I have built up close to $6,000 in investments in one mutual fund. When should one look into diversifying their IRA into multiple mutual or index funds? Here's a 19-year-old who knows more about investing than I do. But and very briefly, because we only have about a minute or so, Deborah.
Okay, with those target funds, Grant, those are diversified within themselves. So at this point, because you're so young, chances are with that Target 60 fund, you have a good diversification with a lot of equity built within it. And the equity is what's going to give you a higher chance of growth in the market. As you invest more, or maybe develop a little bit more of a nest egg in your fund, you can talk with a financial advisor that either you initiated that with, or through your employer if it's an employer-based fund, and talk with them about the best strategy for you. Because certainly if you're able to tuck that money away every year, it's already working for you, and I commend you. That's great. You should be okay for right now. As you merge into multiple funds, you have to look at costs and fees and those types of things. So it's kind of a larger conversation.
In 30 seconds, maybe a quick pep talk. Can we become financially independent?
Absolutely. And it really comes down to having a little bit of discipline, making sure that what you're spending is something that you need, at least for the time being. And as you start tucking some money away, you're going to see the results from that. And I believe you're going to want to continue to do that, to have that flexibility and independence going forward.
This was very helpful, Deborah. I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely. Anytime, Joy.
Deborah DeLeers is a Green Bay-based financial advisor with SII Investments Incorporated. Kevin McKinley will be back next week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.